Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Hey, really funny guy, Steve Byrne, is going to be at the Improv tonight, two shows, tomorrow, two shows, and he's with us in studio right now. And we'll give away tickets here, so keep on listening. Funny, funny. I watched a bunch of your stuff yesterday, as a matter of fact. Just laughing. Yeah, no, it was great.
I'm here to literally apologize in person. I do that whenever I see somebody click and press play. I fly to wherever they are and knock on the door and say, I'm sorry, I'm better than that.
Well,
you are too.
You don't have to lay on the floor here.
I don't have to lay on the floor. Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate
that.
That's one of the great things. So I've listened to, one of the things that's really helped me get, I've always been into stand-up comedy, but...
Yes, because I'm here for you. Yes, yes.
Yes, what is yeah. It? But one of the things that I really think is great is that there's a couple different satellite channels. There's really like four that are dedicated to comedy, four or five.
Yep.
And they do the little snippets, the Raw Dog, and then also I think it's Comedy Central are the two that I have programmed. And so
that's something you brag about to Mom, by the way. It's like, Mom, I finally made it. I'm on Raw Dog. Yeah. What's the Raw Dog, Steve? I'm not on Raw Dog. I'm sorry, Mom.
you get your little, you know, it can be 3 minutes, it could be 8 minutes, and you get little snippets, and they switch to the next comedian, next comedian, and it's a good way to sample and find new comedians. And you've got, you know, plenty of stuff on there. There's a lot of different comedians who have sets and things, and so it's a good way to rediscover or to discover comedians. And there's been a great resurgence over the last, I would say, I don't know. I mean, it seems like maybe 5 or 6 years where stand-up comedy has made a huge resurgence again.
Yeah, like those serious or whatever those comedy channels. Right. It's literally like a better version of Byron Allen's Comics Unleashed where there's never any segues. It's like, you know, somebody's talking about their ex-wife. It's like, so you just got a fireplace, right, Steve? And you're like, now you got to do your fireplace bit. But
yeah,
it's kind of a... an odd thing.
It's like the NFL red zone for comedy.
Yeah,
where it's
for
just,
comedy,
and let's
yeah.
swing to this.
Yeah. But I think especially now whenever, you know, culturally when things are, you know, when things are bad, when there's a recession or everybody feels divisive politically or 9/11, for example, comedy for some reason, people always gravitate back towards comedy. And I remember when I was a young comic in New York City, 9/11, that first week, me and a bunch of young comics that are working at the Comedy Cellar thought, all right, well, that's over. I got to get a real job now.
That you was really fun thought while, that
all,
was it,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, all of us. And then it was like, you know, you could still smell the buildings burning. It's like, who's going to come and laugh? Nobody's going to come to any of these clubs. And for all of us, that was our bread and butter, doing 5 or 6 shows a night. That was how we paid our rent. And we're just thinking, all right, it's done. And then I think the Comedy Cellar was the first club to open maybe like a week later, and it was packed. And I just remember, even at that age, at a young kid, you know, young guy in stand-up, I'm like, if this is – I'll never be out of work. I just remember thinking that. I'll never be out of work. People always need to laugh. And I think when the crap hits the fan, especially, that's when people really need to laugh. And I think especially now with – all the politically divisiveness, the nature of no matter what side you're on, there's a reason that these ratings have spiked on all these networks with political satire because I think people want some release from it. They want some relief.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Steve Byrne is with us in studio. He's at the Improv tonight, two shows, tomorrow, two shows. 713-333-8800. We'll give away a couple of tickets here in just a little bit.
Yeah, and if you like what you heard so far,
it's.
You know,
yeah.
It's a, please come because I'd like to deconstruct. I like to deconstruct what comedy is and means to people. Not
I want to
tell
say
jokes.
I want to say funny stuff. Funny, on the 9/11 stuff. Was, Steve. Not,
yeah. You always start with your 9/11.
Let's talk about the floods here.
Let's lead with disasters.
Well, Chappelle is going with shaming victims. He's under fire. So
it's so crazy because it's like we've gotten to a point where. Comedian, you're being offended at watching a comedian where it's like you're literally going, you're clicking on a program. It's like, all right, let's take these jokes seriously.
Right.
It's like you know what you're getting into. Why are you being offended in the realm of comedy? I don't understand.
It's a new thing too because you guys could have said anything you wanted before.
It's yeah, and
but
look,
not now.
And if you come down on stand-up, or if you come down on the world of stand-up, stand-up is literally the last vessel in which there is free speech, where you can literally say anything. I mean, Joel knows, I mean, as somebody that travels internationally, there's countries you can't make fun of the president. There's countries you can't make fun of the government. But we have that freedom here, and I think people, anybody that goes online and trolls comics or dumps on comics, it's like you're literally going to change the course of society then at some point by being offended at all this stuff. And comedy clubs are going to have restrictions. That's the last place that should have restrictions.
One of the things that I think has really happened is nuance of language is lost on a Twitter generation and on a text message generation because I don't think they get. I think there's a younger audience who doesn't, unless there's an emoji that tells them that alerts them to sarcasm.
Right.
A lot of times there's not an understanding of the nuance of subtleness and sarcasm and facetiousness, and everything is taken so seriously and personally when comedy is not to be taken seriously.
No, not at all. I mean, look, Chappelle is literally one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet in your life. Literally the nicest human being you'll ever meet. He's a loving, caring, very intelligent guy. And when that last round of specials came out and he was getting dumped on for the trans jokes, it's like, look, it's relevant. It's having an impact on society, and isn't that what you want from your best comics, to address the situation and talk about it and explore it and find those dark places and lift up the rocks and find the worms underneath? I think he should be celebrated for it, but of course there's always that neighborhood of folks that are waiting to get upset, and I think there is a younger generation that I find it deplorable what they find as comedy, what they define as comedy, what they think is actual comedy.
Which is what?
There's a whole generation of comics. Patrick Keane, one of our openers on this weekend, has a great line about, this, like alternative comics, for example. He's like, it's just a bunch of kids reading their diary on stage thinking, right?
What is this brand of comedy? I don't even know what that is.
What's that?
What, like alternative comedy? What is this new brand of comedy?
Is like, it's like the too cool for school attitude where somebody like Gabriel Iglesias, for example, or somebody who's more mainstream like Tim Allen or like Jay Leno is the perfect example of somebody who's harmless, who's mainstream, who's crafting a great joke, right? And then you have people that love the Letterman camp, that's a little more esoteric and subversive.
Sure.
So I think, those are the party lines that are drawn in the world of comedy, right? Where it's like, why can't there be room for everybody to be accepted and appreciated? Like, David Cross years ago dumped on Larry the Cable Guy. It's like, Larry the Cable Guy is not thinking about David Cross when he's on his property in Oklahoma fishing in his private lake on his boat.
By the way, it's a character, by the way.
Completely.
And David Cross has always been, I mean, he was really edgy. He was in the very, very edgy camp for a long time. But it has been – he was with that whole Garofalo set that was very
– So that's like the alt
scene. Too cool. I got you.
Society in general, it's like you'll have a guy like Anthony Bourdain who's dumping on Guy Fieri. And it's like Guy Fieri seems like a pretty nice guy. And Anthony Bourdain seems like a get off my lawn kind of like angry kind of dude. Why is this guy who's not likable at all dumping on this guy that couldn't be nicer? He's going to these mom and pop kind of place around the country. And he's got these frosted tips and he's got an eccentric personality, but he seems like a good dude. So it's like, that's the elitist kind of attitude.
I got you.
That all said, you have Asian and Irish blood, right? Which Lance and I both thought that would be a lot more interesting if you were a girl.
No offense.
Well, if I was trying to work in adult film industry,
That's what we thought.
No offense.
You're both comedians in the adult film industry. You're both a little ragged after a few years. Like, it's this time on the road, I've been beat up, and I don't like life. That's the one thing is comedians start here. I'm interested with you. You're a young comedian, right? So go back and watch young Patton Oswalt. Go watch young Louis C.K. Go watch these young guys. Because I watched young Louis C.K. on an old Rodney Dangerfield special. Mm. And you watch them when they're young and their comedy when they're young. Even Bill Hicks.
Yep.
And then when they get older in comedy, woo! It is a cynical, and the life you guys live on the road, and it's a little bit of a grind. Obviously,
it's a grind. It's a grind for people that make it a grind, though. It's like literally, if you work in a factory, right, and if you literally are putting the same three parts on the conveyor belt every day for 25 years, you're going to be miserable. And that's what it is for comics that do the same stuff over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. If you're always creating, if you're constantly giving yourself the challenge, I think that can help curb the isolation and the solitude of the profession of stand-up. But look, I'm one of the guys that I'd rather walk towards the light. I'm just, my nature is, I'm more positive. And I know that there are a lot of cynical people in comedy, and that's why they got into it in the first place. A lot of the guys at the Cellar when I was starting off are dark human beings.
Who is it that did Don't Think Twice, the
Birbiglia
movie? Yeah, Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah.
I thought that was really an interesting movie because it shows, it's an improv troupe made up of comedians, by the way. But it shows how they didn't really love when somebody got a chance that they, like, they want to make it big. And so when somebody else gets that shot to make it big, and there was another show on Showtime, I'm Dying Up Here, about stand-up comedy scene in the 70s, late 70s in Los Angeles, and it kind of shows that comedians, you know, they all want to make it, but when somebody else makes it, it's got to be a little bit tough to see this guy gets a TV show or this guy, you know, ends up getting a break on a one-hour stand-up show. I mean, is that tough? Do you see that inside the business?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the minute somebody gets some, it's like everybody's waiting to pile on them. But the minute they show up in the hallway at the comedy store, it's like, hey, man, congratulations. So awesome. I'm so happy
for
you.
Let me know if you need a writer.
We're just talking crap on the guy. But, look, I'm somebody who had the experience of having three seasons on the air and getting phone calls from supportive friends. And I know what a tough grind it is. No matter if that person is likable or not, I still respect somebody for getting on the air. It's such a difficult thing to do. So I'm always rooting for comics. I really am. And I think like that's why Joel and I started working together, because we've known each other for years. But I did a documentary on The Amazing Jonathan. Do you guys remember Jonathan?
Yeah.
Huge comic.
You did a documentary on him?
Yeah, because 3.5-4 years ago, he was given a terminal diagnosis. And he's outlived all expectations. He was given a year to live. And he pulled himself off the road. And the impetus for me getting involved was, oh, he's doing some shows back again. He's going to go and do these three shows on the East Coast and come out of retirement. But there's this great story about him meeting Joel at the age of 12 and taking him under his wing. So I think as cynical as to go back to your point, the reason I started bringing it up is because there are some really dark people in comedy. Jonathan could be considered one of those guys. He's a very dark human being, but very sweet. And the fact that this guy, who's the last guy in the world you would ever think would take a 12-year-old kid from Australia under his wing, did, and had him working for him full time with a plethora of drugs and women and late nights and all this stuff.
How awesome.
I mean, for you.
I didn't get any of that.
What?
And you're all
awesome. Joel, how awesome for you.
But all the crazy stuff that he was immersed in, like the world of drug deals and being left in junkyards with barking Rottweilers and pit bulls and hitmen. It's like a crazy story. But again, I think comics at the end of the day do have that cloudburst at some point, because if Jonathan has it, then everybody wants it.
So Joel and Steve tonight, right? And you had, who else was opening?
Patrick Keane.
Nice. So you're going to get a bunch of comedy. 713-333-8800 if you want tickets. How about call right now? 713-780-3776. Caller number 8 is going to get the tickets tonight. We'll take your name, your first and last name, and your phone number, and I'll leave your tickets up at the front at the Improv. We'll give them away for what show? What show do you want to give away tonight?
Any show tonight or tomorrow.
Early, late, tomorrow. On Friday and Saturday. So if you want to go see some funny guys,
and
you know, 9/11 notwithstanding,
talk about comedy, not do it.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
This
right.
Is definitely
it's
the
different.
Show for you.
That'll
will
be different
about comedy.
Well, some of your best stuff, some of your funniest stuff that I've heard was, you know, marriage stuff is really easy for single people. You can even gravitate towards it because you know that you can identify with it through friends or whatever.
Yeah.
For married people, when you have the relationship stuff and you talked, oh my gosh, the bit about walking through, was it San Francisco where the guy was eyeballing your wife?
After he was
just sitting and taking a dump. But
true that's, story, by the way.
Yeah. My wife and I, it's so funny.
Guys,
about
rocking a deuce hitting on my wife.
Yeah. And where was it? Was it in San Francisco?
No, it was downtown Los Angeles. We're going to eat. And this guy is squatting down. Powerful
it's really
plot,
a true story.
Totally true story. He's rocking a deuce, and he looks at my wife and he goes, well, hello, beautiful. And my wife's like, oh my God. We literally go to eat lunch, and she's like, we are not going to walk home that way. I'm like, we are definitely walking home that way. I need to see the people's champion again. And we go back and he's getting arrested. And he's got no pants. He's standing by his work of art.
Feels like everything's tied together, though, from previously to the arrest.
Yeah. So we're walking by, and he's like literally yelling at the cops. And then he sees my wife again. He's like, well, hello again. It's like, what world does this guy live in where it's like they shared a moment earlier, and he needs to say hello again? It was like, that guy's my hero.
Speaking of heroes, look at this. I got tweeted this picture. I'm Irish and Asian. This girl right here. See, that's what you would be if you were a girl, Steve.
That's what I would be if I was a girl. That's so, right. Guys, if you ever wanted to bang me, just go to look at that picture and then play the audio clips of me talking about my wife taking a dump.
That's it.
Yeah, that'll get you hopped up.
That if that doesn't get you going.
Well, Olivia Munn, she's half Asian, half white. Daniel Henney, do you guys know that guy? He's like on CSI. He's Korean and Irish, and he's like, I look like him if he was cast in Philadelphia.
Where are you originally from?
Pittsburgh.
Okay, so are you a sports fan at all? Is that a that's not Steelers hat?
It is a Steelers hat.
Oh, it is.
That's a Steelers hat.
I kind of like that. Kinda, I haven't seen that
old
before.
School Steelers hat. Yeah, I went to a game like 3 weeks ago, so I got this.
So you don't consider yourself Asian American?
You know, it's funny because I've been talking about. I'm working on a new hour, basically.
Just try your stuff out here. It's fine.
Well, one of the things workshop I'm doing is monologue jokes. Because we were talking about this earlier, what people think is funny or what people think is like comedy, and I think so many of the stand-up specials these days is somebody pontificating, and I don't know. I think like out of that alt scene, there's a lot of storytelling, but I miss the days of hard jokes, great jokes, and monologue. Carson was clean. There was an intelligence to it. So I've been working with this guy, Argus, and you know, for example, like being Korean, you have to address Kim Jong-un, right? So Kim Jong-un... You know, like for example, right now it's award season for the film industry in Hollywood, and Kim Jong-un is the odds-on favorite for best animated short. It's like, I like jokes like that, and getting to do that. Like, there's a, I don't know if you guys know this, a Hunger Games theme park recently opened in South Korea. It's called North Korea. Kim Jong-un recently achieved the highest rank in the North Korean army, 5'6". There's like an old school mentality to fun, clean, crisp jokes that I appreciate.
Then do you appreciate Anthony Jeselnik, who is literally the polar opposite, who his jokes are so dark, but they're also jokes. Like they're not observations. Jokes. They are old school, hardcore jokes, but they are so – John, you got to hear Anthony Jeselnik. It's so dark – but you don't know where any of the punchlines. I try every single time, and I never know where he's going with any of them.
He's really – look, he's a perfect example of like somebody that's very relevant. He took that old-fashioned style of joke writing and made it relevant, made it his own, and he's very dark. And what's crazy is that he's a Pittsburgh guy. Offstage,
right.
Couldn't be nicer.
Is that right?
It's crazy. He's like really like got a warm personality. But you know underneath there's a darkness and coming out.
You don't write that
sure.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his comedy special got canceled, he says, because he wouldn't back off of some of the stuff that he wanted to do. He didn't want to back off of an idea that he had, and they said, "Hey, we got to dial it back, TV." And he said, "No, I'm not going to dial it back."
He'll be rewarded for that too. A lot of the comics that stick to their guns, eventually at some point it comes full circle.
So. Yeah. We got to cut it there. Joel and Steve at the Improv tonight, two shows, tomorrow two shows. 713-333-8800 if you want to go see him. 713-333-8800 at the Improv tonight and tomorrow. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate
you guys. Thank
you guys
so much. It was great talking comedy.
Joel, thanks for jumping in there. Yeah, that Joel. One time where you got to say three words.
One laughing out. That's what I did.
836 ESPN 97.5.